Return to the record with the appellant's next witness.
Toby Thaler, Fremont Neighborhood Council. We call a witness who is listed by Sun, Seniors United, I believe, David Bloom.
And Toby, could I just clarify? I believe you're calling Mr. Bloom as a fact witness. Is that correct?
Yes.
As opposed to expert?
Not giving opinions.
Please state your name and spell it for the record.
My name is David Bloom, B-L-O-O-M.
And do you swear or affirm the testimony you will provide in today's hearing will be the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
So, is the honorific reverend your...
Not necessary.
Not necessary, but you are...
I'm ordained minister, yes.
Okay. So, Mr. Bloom, can you state your background that's relevant to this hearing?
As I said, my name is David Bloom. I'm a 42-year resident of Seattle, roughly half of that time as a renter and half of that time as a homeowner. I was a co-founder of the Seattle Displacement Coalition, which I am representing at this hearing today. The coalition was founded in 1977, and I currently serve as the board president of the Displacement Coalition.
Before you continue, Mr. Bloom, I remind the parties that at the first pre-hearing conference we had that I did disclose that the Displacement Coalition is a former client of mine.
The Displacement Coalition is one of the members of the Appellant Seattle Coalition for Affordability, Livability, and Equity. I'm here today to testify about the inadequacies of the MHA Environmental Impact Statement description of the displacement and related impacts of the city's proposed action upzoning neighborhoods throughout Seattle.
So, could you explain a little bit what the purpose and activities of the Seattle Displacement Coalition are?
We are, as I said, having been founded in 1977, a 40-year-old citywide nonprofit organization that has advocated for the preservation and protection and increase of the supply of affordable housing, and increasingly have also become involved in addressing issues related to homelessness, which have grown out of our loss of affordable housing. We have organized over time a wide variety of groups and residents and representatives from various church, community, social service organizations working together to preserve and protect our supply of affordable housing, especially that for low-income and vulnerable and marginalized residents. On occasion, we have appealed actions that we believe are not well considered and that are likely to adversely affect these communities, specifically by displacing them from their homes. Therefore, this is not the first time that the displacement coalition has occurred before the hearing examiner.
Okay, I'm going to pull one of the exhibits, and my understanding is these were all shared with you by PDF. I have a notebook that has all of them in full. The first one, I'm just going to bring an extract forward that shows the background of the Displacement Coalition and its long history in dealing with displacement.
And what number of that list is this?
It was listed as number 3 of, I believe, Sun.
Oh, of Sun?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So are you going to be using Sun's exhibit list today for this witness?
Yes, these are all submitted by Sun.
Yes.
My number 3 is not the same as this, so perhaps you can confirm.
The front cover of 3 looks like this. So this is...
Oh, this is an excerpt.
It's
okay,
an excerpt.
Gotcha.
And Mr. Bloom will get into later the relevance of this particular extract. but I'm bringing it forward now because it shows the history of the displacement coalition.
I think it would be appropriate to comment on it at this point. This is a cover and three pages from a lengthy displacement study that was developed by David Hodge, who was a professor of urban geography at the University of Washington back around 1980. Now, that's a long time ago. But the reason that we are submitting this is because we believe it represents the kind of displacement study that the city should undertake in order to understand the actual impact of the loss of affordable housing in our city. Just one example, as he says right off the bat, about 20% of all households who moved in the last 5 years did so because they could no longer afford their unit or because it was demolished, converted to another use, or closed for rehabilitation. It is in our opinion, or it is, I think, more than opinion, that this represents a similar activity that we're experiencing today.
Okay, so you were explaining to me over lunch that this study was related to the founding of the displacement
coalition. We worked with David Hodge in the late 1970s at this time because a group of advocates had come together growing out of the redlining campaign, which is the housing issue in which I cut my teeth. And we became increasingly aware of a growing amount of displacement of low-income residents of rental housing due to rent increases, condominium conversions, demolitions, changes of use, and so on. And as a result of that, we entered into a conversation with Dr. Hodge about these problems, and he performed this displacement study, which was featured prominently, I believe it was in the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, and it was rooted in this kind of information that the Displacement Coalition was founded in the fall of 1977, and we have continued to work on this particular problem for the last 40 years.
Okay, now back to your experience so that we know
Joey,
that you're...
Could I interrupt? I'm sorry. I'm a little confused about the exhibits. I'm looking at what's been provided to us as Sun Exhibit 3, but I'm not seeing this document that you've just handed us.
Well, it's in this binder, and the Sun representative.
It would be, if it's from the 1979 displacement study, it would be Exhibit 27.
Ah, there it is on the list.
Okay, let me go down to 27.
Open PDF 27.
And when I submitted it, because it was given to me as three separate files, but I have all of them together listed as Exhibit 27. It's a 1979 Seattle displacement study, first, middle, and last, or something of that nature.
Okay, so this is Exhibit 27 on Sun's list.
Yes,
okay.
I'm sorry, I was reading from the top.
That would be the cover of the first file of number 27.
Yeah, I was confused.
Okay.
So, Mr. Bloom, back to your personal direct involvement with the facts and history of displacement. Can you go through that, please?
I have substantial experience over the last 40 years as an advocate, organizer, and educator on the issues of housing and homelessness. I served for about 20 years as the Associate Director of the Church Council of Greater Seattle, where I organized and directed the urban programs of the council with a particular emphasis on housing and homelessness issues. I'm a founder of the Downtown Emergency Service Center. I am a founder of Common Ground, a nonprofit housing development consulting organization that ultimately was consumed under Bellwether. I am a founder of the Homelessness Project, which was a project of the Church Council that provided transitional housing for homeless women with children, a program that now operates under the auspices of the Compass Housing Alliance. I directed a HUD-funded displacement project in Seattle, I think one of the first in the nation in the late 1970s. I was one of the first advocates for the housing levy in the mid-1980s. I served as the chair of the Convention Center Coalition in the early 1980s, opposing the placement of the Convention Center over the freeway because of the potential loss of affordable housing, which turned out to be the case. We did win some housing mitigation. We also were able to save the 8th Avenue overpass, which you may know as that little tunnel that runs from Pike Street up to First Hill. That's so the emergency vehicles could get up there. They did not have that in the original plan. Over the years, I've organized dozens, maybe scores, of citywide workshops, conferences, bringing people together from a wide variety, government, business, religious community, social service agencies of our community to work on and develop strategies related to issues of housing and homelessness. I've served on a variety of citywide task forces. I was a member of the Pike Market Preservation and Development Authority Council, where I chaired the Social Service and Housing Committee. I'm a past board president of Real Change. I organized the Interfaith Task Force on Homelessness about 15 years ago. I've spoken to the media scores of times on these issues. I was a candidate for city council in 2009,
Your Honor, could I ask the point of this testimony, since he's not testifying as an expert? I don't know.
I am trying to establish my credibility.
Okay.
In other words, I have a long history in working on these issues.
Foundation. That's foundation for the factual assertions. So can you explain the Displacement Coalition's interest in the MHA program and the EIS?
We believe that the groups and individuals that we have worked with over the years and that we consider to be our constituency are vulnerable and may be negatively affected by the planned up zones that are identified in the MHA upzone plan, and it's consistent with our historic concern about these issues.
So to make a point in response to the inquiry about the scope of testimony by counsel, over lunch I said, you know, you're not testifying as an expert. What did you tell me?
I'm not an expert in terms of some of the experts like Peter Steinbrook, who preceded me, who is an architect. I'm an advocate.
Thank you. So isn't the MHA program intended to solve some of the problems with affordable housing?
We believe that there is little in the EIS in the way of mitigation measures to address the displacement effects and the loss of low-income housing accompanying the plan. Further, we do not believe that the final environmental impact statement either adequately or accurately assesses the numerous impacts associated with these planned upzones that will touch nearly every corner and every neighborhood of Seattle. And I might reference the testimony by Mr. Steinbrook earlier, for which I was present, when he raised questions about how limited the upzone impact might actually be, and I think those are legitimate questions. There is a stated a quid pro quo that we will get in the EIS, that we will get a significant number of affordable, or in the MHA plan, I should say, a significant number of affordable units in exchange for upzones. But contrary to what the EIS attempts to portray, the number of affordable units created by the mandatory requirement, which are stated as 6,000 over a 20-year planning period, will be greatly offset by a far greater loss of existing unsubsidized low-cost units due directly to these planned upzones. The EIS significantly downplays and diminishes the extent and level of displacement and loss of low-income housing accompanying the plan, while inflating the total subsidized units that could be created by the MHA. As such, this document does not provide decision makers with a fair, balanced, or accurate analysis. Further, this has led the city's planners to draw up a wholly inadequate set of mitigation measures to address displacement effects and the loss of low-income housing accompanying the plan.
So how do you think EIS inflates the estimated number of new subsidized?
It does so in at least two ways. First, it uses a flawed methodology for making the calculation. To arrive at roughly 6,000 MHA units over 20 years, planners assume a significant portion of these will be created when developers make a payment to the city instead of including those units in their projects. The city then adds up the full value of all these developer payments and then assumes, falsely, we believe, that it will take only about $100,000 of those payments to create or produce one affordable unit, when in reality, the actual cost to produce a new affordable unit will run well up to around $250,000, which I think is a term that is roughly agreed upon by the Office of Housing and the nonprofit development community. The city's lowball of $100,000 per unit assumes it can find dollars from other finite state, federal, and even local sources to fill this gap to produce a $250,000 for a new unit. But this would be pulling dollars away that otherwise could be used elsewhere and should be used elsewhere to build more low-cost units. As I look at this, even though the plan says that developers are going to include affordable units in their projects, one more time, we are subsidizing developers to make up the gap. Properly assuming a cost of $250,000 a unit means that MHA developer payments will create far less than the total of 6,000, closer to, say, 3,000, we would estimate, actual units over the planning period identified in the EIS. Secondly, most of these units will be priced all the way up to 60% of median. Now, folks, for I think a one-person household, that may be up around $40,000. I'm not sure, but it's close to that. Up to 60% of median at rents far above what most low-income people can afford, especially those at 30% of median and below. Some 30,000 households and another 20,000 households with incomes below 50% of median. The units that will be created will not be affordable to those low and very low-income groups that are most in need and most likely to be displaced by the MHA upzone plan.
Your Honor, I'm sorry, I have to make an objection. It appears Mr. Bloom is reading a statement with very little questioning from Mr. Thaler.
I was just about to ask about that. It
doesn't seem appropriate.
Are we intending that this just be a statement?
Yes.
All right. Well, how about your counsel answer that?
Okay.
Well, I have a few questions. The Displacement Coalition is a member of SCALE, wants their voice heard. And they are bringing forth facts. If the city wants to dispute the facts, the record will be open for that presentation at your case or on cross-examination.
And are we going to get a copy of the statement? We indicated this yesterday, and I indicated at that time I like to get statements if individuals are going to be reading from them. I don't have a problem with that.
Okay. Sure. We can print it out afterwards. Send it.
I'm going to get a copy of it now. If there's any intention for any of the parties to make statements in the future,
we actually asked for a copy.
Let me finish, please.
Okay, sorry.
If any witnesses in the future intend to do statements or have notes, I will ask that those be introduced into the record so that
okay.
I can follow along and that we can have a record of what they have in front of us. We will pause now and get a copy of these from the witness.
Don't forget to cut it off before your notes.
Hmm?
I forget to only hand her up to your
right.